Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is attorney, Blackjack Hall of Famer, and good friend of our show, Bob Nersessian, who, perhaps this time only, we're referring to as Las Vegas' own Bob Loeb. Bob Nersessian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, and thanks for the compliment.
Bob, we always referred to Bob Lowe as Chicago's Bob Nersessian, and he was so good a couple months ago that we're going to turn it around. But since you guys are friends and respect each other, it's no big deal, I guess.
I actually wish I had his constitution.
Oh. What country do you live in?
Yeah, you're right.
Good, all right. Good question.
In the past few days, we received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Seems this guy wants to play in Lithuania, where the casino is run and maybe owned by MGM. For him to get the comps, he has to send 5,000 euros front money, which is about $5,500. He wants to know if it is safe trusting an Eastern European country with his money. Richard, you've traveled some in Europe. What do you have to say about this?
You know, I don't know anything specifically about Lithuania. I have put up front money in foreign casinos before, but I have no idea about Lithuania. But what I would do is I would go onto either BJ21 or Blackjack the Forum, both very popular websites for blackjack players. And they have a sub forum about foreign play, and I would ask if anybody has played there and get some feedback from people. And there are definitely quite a number of foreign players on both sites, and I would investigate it in that way. So,
all right.
As I say, I don't have a specific knowledge of Lithuania. You know, can I tell you, Bob, we also have a question from a listener who tweeted it at us.
Tweeted it. Our
tweeted
first
it
tweet
at,
of the day.
At RWM21. And they want to know, can hand pays on slots be split if you're playing with a friend, or will the casino only generate one W2G regardless?
And you're asking me or Bob?
I figured you would know better than Bob would on this one.
You need to get the casino to cooperate with you. There's some salesmanship in that. Now, there is an IRS form 54, 57, something like that, which allows you to split jackpots. And sometimes the casino will go along with that, and sometimes the casino won't.
Okay, so it just depends on which casino you're in.
And your salesmanship. Some people can talk anybody into anything. Some people around whom whores play hard to get. So, you know, just different people have different skills in talking people into things.
Now, there's a phrase I hadn't heard before.
Well, you learned something on this show. That's our goal of our show. You know more tomorrow than you did yesterday.
Yeah.
All right. Another email wants to know, I guess it's mainly Richard and I, when we were beginning gamblers, and maybe today, what did we tell people when they asked us what we did for a living? Now, sometimes I use Stanford Wong's line of I'm into short-term investing. I also told people that I was a dance teacher. Never mind that the job was for a couple evenings a week in a country western bar paying $50 a night. But But if I wanted to get laid, that was a more fruitful direction to have the conversation go into than if I could count down a blackjack deck. Now, Richard, what did you tell people?
You know, it really depended and still depends entirely on who the person is, where we are, whether I want to get into a long discussion. If I want to shut it down very quickly, I used to say I was a probabilities engineer. And sometimes I'll just say I'm a writer. I was actually more concerned about it with my children because I used to live in Stepford land. I mean, where I used to live was about as white bread conservative as you could get. And I didn't want my kids to suffer any blowback. So my son came home from kindergarten one day and said, oh, the teacher wanted to know what you do for a living. And I said, what did you tell her? And he said, oh, I told her you play blackjack. And I said, you know, next time they ask, just tell them that I'm a writer, you know, because I'm sure went way over the teacher's head. I'm sure she thought, you know, he had seen me playing a video game or something. But
So, Bob Nersessian, what do you tell people when you're too embarrassed to tell them you're really a lawyer?
well, wait a minute. I got to wake up. I fell asleep on that probabilities engineer line. what do I – you know, I have hidden it. you got to play to your audience.
That's it. Okay. Oh, good. We just took that question out. Now, there's some good news for players. We've spoken numerous times on this show, sometimes with Bob Nersessian, about asset seizures at traffic stops. A couple of years ago, two California poker players had a little more than $100,000 confiscated by the police in Iowa on a trumped-up traffic stop. Eventually, $90,000 of that was recovered, but $30,000 went to the lawyers. Meanwhile, the poker players had significant loss of income because their bankrolls were seized and they could no longer enter tournaments, and one of them suffered a stroke, allegedly due to the stress of losing everything. In the lawsuits to recover the money, the plaintiffs also named the police officers individually and a company called Desert Snow, a company that trains officers to conduct searches in such a way that yields money to confiscate, including targeting out-of-state license plates. Recently, a federal judge ruled that the lawsuits against these officers and Desert Snow may continue. In the order from the district judge, the judge described Desert Snow as follows. Desert Snow trains law enforcement officers that the following factors are indicators of criminal activity. Dark window tint. Air fresheners. Trash in the vehicles. Inconsistent or unlikely travel stories. Vehicles on long trips that are clean or lack luggage, so either there's trash or it's clean, either one gets you. A presence of energy drink, lay off the Red Bull.
This is every teenage boy in America.
Drivers that are too talkative or too quiet. Designer apparel, I guess, I'm not sure. Multiple cell phones, multiple I assume means two, or more, rental vehicles, physical signs of nervousness, such as sweating, swallowing, face redness, or pulsating carotid artery. Desert Snow's marketing specialist stated that drug interdiction suit's ability to seize motorists' cash is a tax-liberating gold mine for the communities and is turning our police forces into present-day Robin Hoods. This is for the judge's order. All right, Bob Nersessian. Having a case move forward is a step in the right direction, but it doesn't mean this is over by any means. What do you think of all this?
Well, the one thing I'm hearing in there is that they, like you're alluding to, crossed an incredible threshold. And the one I'm looking at, reading between the lines, is that they still gave up $10,000 to get the $90,000 back. Generally, in these types of situations, if you admit or forfeit anything, the courts in the subsequent civil suit will use that partial forfeiture or concession as an admission that there was at least probable cause, and therefore you don't have, or you've admitted that what they did was correct. Somehow they got past that. What a wonderful thing. The other part from what I just heard, and you asked what I think about it, and in the book coming out soon, there's a chapter on a lot of this, and these conflicting indicia of criminal activity are just twisted, and the courts go to them all the time. Heading towards a drug destination city, coming from a drug destination city, being within four states of a drug destination city. It doesn't matter. If you're in a car and driving, these people have been, I'm actually surprised that there's a training organization out there that has to teach someone that you can look at something. For instance, Bob, you're blinking right now. Oh my God, there must be cocaine in your pocket. And that's the way it works.
Yeah, Mr. Sherlock Holmes right here on the show. Yeah.
So, well, and this carries through to the even further stuff of they don't even have to tell the truth.
The police.
When it comes time to support what they're doing, you then run into things like, and we've all heard this or seen it in the paper, and people die over this. He made a furtive move. I've been living on this earth for 58 years, and I don't know if I make a furtive move from one second to the next.
Well, you just scratched your nose. I think that might be one.
Thank you for toning down on what I did with my nose. So, and then, well,
you thumb and forefinger, folks.
Oh, okay. Let's get graphic now. Furtive moves, and I actually did a quick search on something the other day, and I think I found 706 cases that discuss or state. My search for relevant cases was baggy within four, pocket within four corner. Now, what does that search show you?
Baggy?
That's drugs.
Okay. Pocket and corner. I then started searching. I was right on. The first six hits were, the police officer observed a corner of a baggie sticking out of the subject's pocket. Now, again, I've been living on this earth for 58 years. I have never seen a corner of a baggie sticking out of a pocket. But if you look at suppression motions and what you do with police searches, apparently, we are suffering an epidemic of shown baggies.
Right.
They're everywhere. Moreover, and this is the part that just frustrates me, because everything we have here says that our judges are our bastions of liberty. They're here to protect us, okay? And every single time, I did find an exception. I found one case where the judge said, there's no baggies sticking out of pockets. But for the most part, it is always the same line. I find the officer's testimony credible, and the denial by the defendant, who was actually arrested and was carrying drugs and therefore lacks credibility, incredible. Mm. And the person goes to jail or whatever. And baggies don't only denote. Well, here's one I'm actually dealing with at the moment, okay? There was a bulge in his pocket, and we suspected cocaine. I know.
Could have been glad to see you.
Well, the other problem is if a person is carrying cocaine, there ain't no bulge. There is no way to carry personal use cocaine that creates a bulge. If you used it, you'd be dead. So the concept that he saw a bulge in a pocket was a basis for a search or a seizure is ridiculous. It just is, and we see this everywhere. I am heartened to hear that this judge let this go forward. What we're seeing is, and just, if you fart around on YouTube for 20 minutes, you'll see 100 of these things.
Yes.
What about this company, Snow, whatever?
Desert Snow.
Desert Snow. I mean, could they be open to a class action suit?
I think that they're in the business. I mean, if no, I can't say that because I'll end up in that liable situation. But I find it ironic that they name their company after drugs. And it seems to me that that might be an indication of somebody who is looking at seizures for an entirely different reason. But what about it? What was the last part of that question?
Well, could they be open to a class action?
Geez, I wish I hadn't heard the question. Class actions are bizarre, expensive, and I am not in the realm of attorneys that can address that because I wouldn't touch one with a 10-foot pole unless I was referring it to somebody who was going to throw me a referral fee. And
so we'll ask you a different question on a different subject. This situation isn't gambling, but if the allegations are to be believed, it's clearly a case of being an advantage player. A man named Robert Chat, a Florida man, apparently discovered a nice glitch in the Choice Hotel's frequent visitor program. For every stay in the hotel chain, or maybe certain other purchases, you get awarded bonus rewards, which may be redeemed for a variety of things. Apparently, Chat found that if he makes a reservation online using his Choice Hotel's account number, and then he cancels the reservation, he still keeps the bonus reward points for that reservation. So he made lots of reservations, canceled some of them, and accumulated almost $50,000 worth of goodies, which he redeemed at places such as Dunkin' Donuts, Target, Applebee's, and Home Depot. That's a lot of donuts, but at Home Depot you can go through $50,000, I suppose. Anyway, the hotel chain is suing him for abuse of their system. Chat said in a newspaper interview, which probably took place before he had an attorney to tell him to shut up, that he didn't do anything wrong, and if the hotel chain gave him too many bonus points, it's their fault and not his. What do you think about this, Bob Nersessian?
I think he should have been more under the radar. Seriously, this is an issue for prosecutors everywhere. And while he's only being sued civilly, that taking advantage of that type of situation, I've seen, and recently in Pennsylvania more than any place else, but also in Mississippi, that when these types of things are discovered and capitalized upon, and the victim is somebody with, oh, let's just call it juice, the perpetrator, or to be nice, customer, finds themselves at the south side of some kind of indictment. And they're being very creative in getting there. I think this suit will go forward. I think it'll go to a jury.
And
it's going to be up to the jury to decide. Pennsylvania, for example, would take this and say there was a computer on the other end of this. Therefore, this is hacking.
Hacking.
Yeah. This is a computer crime by invading that computer and using it for an illegitimate purpose under some stretched Pennsylvania statute. That's the kind of stuff that's going on. Now, the other thing is, functionally, every state has enacted something to address ATMs, which essentially is, if you are standing somewhere and something spits out more money than you're entitled to, and I think the word is entitled, then keeping that money is also a crime. In this particular instance, from what you've described, it sounds to me like there might be a little glitch in the law this time for this guy to work off of, which is, I'll bet somewhere this company has published that their points have, quote, no cash value, close quote, and the statutes, and if the plaintiff is trying to co-opt that, if the hotel chain is trying to co-opt that statute as showing that this was a crime because he was taking something not received, the statutes generally refer to money, and he gets to say, this isn't money. You just said it's got no cash value. They come back and say, well, you got 50 grand. Goes, well, why would you lie to me? No, he's turned it right back at him.
This seems like a really bad strategy for the hotels. I mean, you know, I don't see how this helps them. I mean, 50,000 to Choice Hotels is nothing. And the negative publicity of them prosecuting the guy, I think, is...
I think the negative publicity reaches to our circle of friends.
Really? You don't think it reaches to all people who travel? People who look at, like, travel blogs and travel writers and things? Wow, you know? Choice Hotels is going to sue you for taking advantage of their point program?
Yes. I do think it doesn't reach that.
You've been reading too many judgments. This is a firm. What the next?
No, I just lost my train of speech.
Good. So let's take this to casinos. Slot clubs have a lot in common with this. Now, 15 years ago, as described in my million-dollar video poker autobiography, the MGM Grand had certain machines were giving away too many slot club points. They were doing video poker at the slot club rate, and I milked that for probably 75,000 and three PT Cruisers before they finally closed it. And that was, and it's like, how is that different?
It's different because the casino is offering that up as a game. The hotel is offering that program as a bonus for the contracts that they're entering into to stay at their hotel. The slot clubs and cash back or points or whatever you want are there for the taking while... And I'm going to put it this way, and I think this will work. They're there for the taking, while when you're dealing with Choice Hotels, their points are there for the earning.
Yeah, it seems to me you got to earn those slot points.
They expect you to earn them, but they're the ones who put it out there in such a way while you're playing their game in a competition that gave you the bonus. There's no competition with Choice Hotels.
Sure,
there's
there
no
is.
Game.
Well,
no,
it's whether you stay at Choice or Marriott or Hilton or something. There's a definite competition
there. To me, the difference is when you play video poker, the casino sets the rate and they say, we're agreeing to give you this many points for you playing this game. In the hotel, they're saying, if you stay with us, we'll give you this many points.
Exactly.
And the guy isn't staying there. He's just making a reservation and canceling it.
They're not getting their end of the deal.
Here's the equivalent. If you went up to a slot machine and you put in $1,000 and then just hit the cash out button and you found a slot machine that would give you slot cup points just for having put the money in and taking it back out, to me that would be the equivalent case. And I'm sure the casino would...
frown upon
have
that.
A shit feel.
Not only frown upon it, but in both cases, the last one Richard described and the hotel, the person giving up the points got nothing in return. And when you play the slot club, they're getting your action in return.
Right. In the particular example, in my case, it was they were giving away more than they intended to.
Yeah. See, to me, I think you're on really safe ground. They're much safer than a situation where, say, the video poker machine was paying $40,000 on the Royal instead of $4,000, right? Like, in that case, the machine is mispaying. The other is the casino has set the wrong, you know what I mean? Like, I would be more afraid of playing the slot with the wrong pay table than I would getting the points because they gave me too many.
All right, let's move on to something else.
I thought we could have finished the show on this one.
We easily could.
But your questions are hard and a new one makes it more difficult.
The Playboy Club in London, run by Caesars Entertainment. Two blackjack players won about £20,000 last year, in addition to starting with £13,000 in bankroll. The Playboy Club has refused to pay them any of that £33,000 because card counting is against the rules at the Playboy Club. The player sued, and the court ruled in favor of the casino. Bob Nersessian. In the United States, card counting is legal, so this ruling appears outrageous to most of our listeners. What do you make of it?
I think in England, card counting is legal. I think that we might be, on some stuff I saw, and maybe you know more than I do, isn't the Playboy Club a private club?
All the casinos in the UK are private clubs.
And when you sign up, according to their rules.
Yes.
That's a contract, okay? And if it's said in those rules there's no card counting allowed, I can understand the rationale for the decision.
Keeping their front money?
Not their front money. Come on.
Yeah, because they've kept the front money as well.
But I get it the other way. If that is the case and there was a contract and those rules were in the agreement. One of the problems I see, though, and I don't understand how you would even get around this, and you guys are gamblers, and I'm not, or at least in games of chance.
But you're a member of the Blackjack Hall of Fame, and I'm not.
My gambling, everything I do, because I'm a plaintiff's attorney working primarily on contingent fees, is a gamble.
Yes.
And it's also a competition. I think I live a life very analogous to what the gamblers do in that sense. But that is an aside. The gamblers I know, centering on card counters, they card count by rote.
Yes. Okay?
If they've moved forward and they are now a whole carder, or they've got another sophisticated thing, or they've switched over. If they're sitting at a blackjack table and they think their shuffle tracker and that's where their big money is, they can't sit there and not count. Is that true?
Yeah, I have to say I have had this conversation with numerous people. Do not count the cards. You know, do not do it.
You can't not do it.
And they say that. I can't not do it.
So with that being the case, they've entered into a contract with people where it's impossible, and that puts extra modalities or considerations into the mix with what they're essentially saying is if you know how to card count, you can't enter into a contract with us. And we can't enter into it, but the corollary is we can't enter into a contract with you, and the whole thing should go down the toilet. I don't get how they would even argue that they get to keep the $13,000. I think that this, in all likelihood, is going to do something that I've heard suggested as well, which is don't go gamble in England under any circumstances. This can be extended Lord knows how far.
But remember, it wasn't that long ago.
I
just want to correct one thing I said, that all the casinos there are private clubs. There are some casinos there now where you do not have to join. It used to be that all of them you had to join and wait a cooling off period, but now there are a few where you can.
Well, if it's joining like it's joining a bar in Utah 20 years ago, where you had to pay the $5, sign the card, go in, and now you can drink there. Because you could only buy drinks in a private club. If it's just sign a sheet of paper and now you're in our casino, I can't fathom how this decision worked. If they hand them the paper, it's a sheath, it's got the terms in it, and the guy signs off on the bottom, that's his burn. Don't card count, and if you do card count, play slots.
I've been saying for 30-plus years that London is a gold mine, that no one has figured out how to get the gold out of the mine. They get huge action, but it's just really difficult to get the money out of those clubs, especially as an American.
And in light of the Phil Ivey decision coupled uh-huh. with this one, obviously the courts are lining up behind the fact that casinos exist in our country meaning Great Britain here.
To milk the players.
To milk the players. It's not a competition. In the Ivy decision, the guy tipped his hat to it, the judge, but then threw that out the window and said, it has to be the competition that everybody knows is going on, and you can't sneak behind the wall and create a new competition. Well, I don't know. That's like saying that if you're the New England Patriots, it's not saying that if you're the New England Patriots, you can deflate the balls, but it is saying if you're the New England Patriots and you come up with a new triple back offense that just smokes everybody, you can't use it. That's where England is. You can't advance your skill set under the rules that exist. And so I guess the thing we're all going to do is, if we look at England, is someday go back to a point where we're not even throwing dice, we're throwing bones, because nothing can advance or change.
Hmm. All right.
By the way, I should say that one of the players has been on our show before under the name Casey, and he has agreed to come on the show maybe in about a month. The movie that he made, people ask me about constantly, when is that movie coming out? He assures me that they really, really are finishing it now, and so maybe within about a month they should be completely done. He'll come on at that time, both to promote the movie and tell us more about this particular case.
Which movie is this?
What was the name of it? Was it Inside the Edge?
I don't know.
Is this the traveling guy?
Yeah. He went to the movie shows him going to all these casinos under all different disguises.
I think I'm on the YouTube trailer for it, and I don't even remember how or when, and I know I never saw the movie.
It was like 4 years ago that they were working on it, so yeah.
All right. We got a little bit of time. Last week, Richard mentioned on the air that it was unfair for casinos to care whether video poker progressives at a high number were being played by pros or non-pros. I disagreed at the time, but I didn't think we had the time to get into it. Let's assume we have a bank of 8 machines of dollar games that become 100% EV-wise when the progressive hits $7,000. Progressive is now at $10,000. So players have a 1.5% edge. Every seat is taken. Further, there are other players milling around hoping to get a seat if somebody leaves. Now, if everybody's quiet, there's no problem and the slot director doesn't have to make any decisions. But if one of the non-seat holders starts to make a stink, something has to be done. If the players waiting are regulars at this game, and the people at the seats are all strangers to the casino who just happen to know each other, this makes the solution easy. The slot director wants to keep his regular customers happy because they pay his salary. And if one of them hits the progressive, they're going to lose it back in the casino in the next month or so. If a pro hits it, the money's gone from the local economy. So the slot director may try to figure out who the leader of this team is and negotiate for a few seats. He might say, I need 3 seats for regular customers. A smart team leader will say, sure. Sometimes the slot director will overreact and kick off everybody he doesn't know, including team members and non-team members that just happen to be there. It's not right. It happens. Not everybody is good at making decisions if there's a lot of shouting going on. And the smaller, more local a casino is, the more likely a large group of non-regulars will be kicked off the machines. If there's just 1 or 2 pros on a bank of 8 machines, they'll probably be all right. Richard.
Yeah, I think my point was that I would not kick out the pros. I mean, your example of the slot director trying to find a solution to his problem, I think that's a much more reasonable approach. What the casinos don't take into account is that when a pro, first of all, the progressive money no longer belongs to the casino. They get no part of it. It's basically in escrow for someone to hit it. So it doesn't really matter to them who hits it. They can argue that, you know, if a degenerate hits it, they're going to lose all of it back. But my point is they discount the value of the pro who's going to sit at the machine and play as fast as humanly possible, and they're going to earn their 5 or 10% hold, whatever it is, off that pro for all that time that he's playing, all those pros, all the time that they're playing, until the jackpot gets hit. So they are earning money for the casino.
But the pros are making more intelligent plays. The casino's making 5% off the pros, would be making 6% off of the local who has no idea what he's doing. But just that.
But the pros are playing much faster than the local, and they will sit there until, they will play hours and hours and hours until it gets hit.
Well, the progressive's going to get hit when it gets hit.
Right, but wouldn't you rather have people playing the machines as fast as possible until it gets hit? You're earning your whatever your hold is on that machine until that point.
Well, again, you're smarter than most slot directors.
Well, you don't need to throw these people out. You know, you shouldn't be throwing people out of the casino. That's my point, especially slot players.
Slot players as opposed to video poker players.
Even video poker players. I would not throw video poker players out of my casino. All I would do is just stop sending them mail.
Uh-huh. Good. Now, Bob, if I were a pro playing this machine and the casino kicked me out really for no reason other than that locals, they wanted their favorite customers to play, do I have any kind of case?
There's an argument. It's currently not known, at least in Nevada. In New Jersey, you probably have a very good argument under the Houston rationale of duty to provide public access. But in Nevada, if you read Bob Loeb's book, Blackjack and the Law, you'll see that he reaches a conclusion that it hasn't been decided yet, and the Nevada Supreme Court will eventually say, yeah, you can't kick people off who are just following your rules. You have to allow access to gaming to everybody. And if you selectively use your trespass or banning power, you're violating, I think it's NRS 463.0129. Then there's others who say no. For example, Tony Cabot, who's written on this extensively, thinks that casinos have an absolute right to choose and not choose who plays where and when. And when you take all of this down, it's still up in the air, but casinos operate on the side of that's our absolute right. And on the flip side, you want to challenge it, you're looking at $25,000 in attorney's fees to be able to sit at a blackjack game.
I did have a friend kicked off a slot machine, bounced off the walls of an elevator. It was worth $25,000 or $30,000. So, well, to him,
that's the bouncing off walls part.
And you have to be careful.
And he probably didn't have to pay it up front.
No. Yeah.
If you want me to sue for access and get this decision determined, which would require me to go to the Nevada Supreme Court, it's five figures and probably multiple five figures.
But it would be better to just take a case where it happened and where you think the guy has a legitimate shot of a settlement, right? An abuse of civil rights case.
It's very clear that a casino is not the state, and they don't have an obligation constitutionally to provide you civil rights.
They can't handcuff you for playing a slot machine.
No, if it's a handcuffing case, that's a totally different thing.
Okay.
But you see, you're now stretching this out. If they come up and they say you can't play that game, and you flip them off, and then you sit there and continue to play and will not follow their instructions, then they tell you to leave and you don't leave. Now they slap the handcuffs on you. That's not slapping the handcuffs on you for playing that game. That's slapping the handcuffs on you for violating NRS 207.200 and trespassing.
Right.
They don't throw the handcuffs on you because you say I'm entitled to play this game. There's always another reason.
No, when they make the mistake, they don't even come up and ask you not to play. They just come up and grab you and say you're not playing anymore and, you know, slap the handcuffs on you. Then you have a good case.
Then you do, but I haven't seen that one really. Huh. Actually, I did see it a little bit with somebody we all know who will remain nameless, but his initials are Joe Payne. where they just came up and accosted him one time for nothing. And he wasn't even playing.
Wow.
Well, James's case wasn't playing when he got the big settlement.
At the Imperial Palace.
I understand.
Palace.
Yeah, that one was twisted. But
that made him and that made you. So that was a good case.
All right, I'll accept that. I like to think that I made me.
Yeah, you had a... All right.
No. Yeah, you did. I mean, it was your case, yeah.
All right, Richard. We can get started. I don't know how far we can get on this. We received an email, gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Guy found a good blackjack game somewhere where the minimum bet was $25. He currently has a $3,000 bankroll, but is able to add $2,000 a month from savings or from earnings. He wants to know if he should consider his bankroll $3,000 or maybe $25,000, which is the amount he's going to have in a year.
Yeah, I would consider it $25,000 or even more. I mean, you have to decide how much you're willing to devote to this, playing this game, and how much you want to earn per hour. And I would, you know, play with Casino Verite and determine, you know, what you need to bet to earn what it is you want to earn. And then it'll tell you how big a bankroll you actually need. And then you can decide, gee, am I willing to devote this $2,000 a month for the next 2 years to this? But definitely I would... We call that a replenishable bankroll. So, yeah, I would take a bigger number.
Okay. Now, this particular guy was talking about a game that he found. And if he's planning to play, I think it was a double deck game, at the same casino over and over and over again, and that's his only source to play, he's going to be booted way before he gets out of that big bankroll.
Yeah, he'll probably get, you know, he might get 20 hours if he's lucky on the game. I mean, it just depends on his act and you know, his spread and the particular tolerance of the casino. But, yeah, you're not going to be playing that game for long. Not if you're competent.
So his bankroll is going to be nowhere near $25,000 by the time they boot him.
True, but by the time they boot him, more than likely he'll be ahead when they boot him. I mean, they do bar people that are losing, but less often. They, you know, usually when you start winning is when they start booting you. So,
well, good. That hasn't always been my experience. I've been booted when I'm down. Which
no, it does happen. It definitely
really
does happen.
Ticks me off. By the way.
Yeah. Well, and it certainly happens if you're already in the databases. You know, then it has nothing to do with how – sometimes you'll get booted before you even sit down at the table. You know, but if you're a clean player, which I'm assuming this guy is based on his question, you know, then he is going to get to play some. But, you know, if the game was at the El Cortez, I would expect him to last 5 to 10 minutes, you know.
That long.
Yeah.
I didn't last that long last time I tried. But,
and I'm not a good player. So anyway, let's do a commercials, and then we're going to try another question from Mr. Nersessian Esquire. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more games than anybody else has. For the entire month of July, there are two separate casino-wise progressives running 24/7. In the $600,000 July Money Madness promotion. The bigger the two progressives begins at $10,000, must be hit before it reaches $25,000. One winner will get the big prize each time, and everybody actively playing with a player's card earns $25 in free play when the jackpot goes off. Immediately thereafter, it resets at $10,000 and begins to climb again. Simultaneously, There's another progressive starting at 1,000 and must be hit by 2,500. This too will start again immediately after it hits and is predicted to hit three times a day all month long. At the Palms, they were weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Friday. Winners share $10,000. You don't need to be there to win, but you need to claim your prize by midnight. There are ticket multipliers Friday afternoon and Friday evening. PFP, Play for Prizes, is for Albertsons this time. Albertsons is a supermarket. It's for, I don't have the cards in front of me, but they're also for other supermarkets that are related to Albertsons in different parts of the country. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.20%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for a gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. You can get the strategy from me or the Wizard of Oz website, but if you want correction, go to videopoker.com. The game of the week is Double Super Times Pay. This is a 7-coin per line game where periodically you get bonuses from 2x to 10x at two separate times. There is no change to the basic strategy to the game, and the Double Super Times Pay feature adds approximately 0.5%, so with considerable variance. Rarely, but still sometimes, the multiplier turns out to be 20x, meaning 10x on both, and it mostly happens when you get dealt royal flushes. Dealt royal flushes occur every 650,000 hands, more or less. 1 in 15 of those, or about 10 million hands, you get the 20x multiplier simultaneously. Now, this dealt, so if you're a dollar 10 play, you pay $35 a hand. A dealt royal is usually only $40,000. But if you get that multiplier 1 in 15 times, it's $800,000. So this has to be factored in to the return. So this is over 0.1%. So if you take that out, because once every 10 million hands, come on, it's not going to happen.
It would happen to me.
Yeah, well.
Because I'm lucky.
Good. Well, it's actually happened to me, not that particular one. But yeah, some of these long things, you play enough things, you get dealt royals and stuff.
Not me.
You haven't played that long. It's a large factor in getting dealt royals is how many hours your butt's been in the chair. So it's about 1 in 15 royals is dealt. So have you had 15 royals yet, Bob?
No, but I've had a dealt royal.
Oh, good.
Actually, it was on a really cool game, too, the one where you're playing three. The one where you're playing three hands at once.
Triple play.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't triple play because... Oh, the four hands with the multiplier.
That would be multi-strike.
Yes. I hit it on the third row up.
Good. That's a four times multiplier.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, good. Good. He's
smiling. He's beaming. Just
yeah,
thinking
well,
about it.
Good. Good. All right. Good. So... So even though this 20x multiplier on the dealt royals, every 15 times you get it, adds more than 0.1%. So it's really like it's only 0.4% better rather than 0.5% better. But it might happen. All right. So Bob Nersessian, you've been talking about this book that is almost out. Anthony Curtis tells us the ball's in your court. Is it going to be out this week? What's the story?
It's not out this week. It's done. Okay? The only thing we're doing is a historical glitch in the software transfers caused the footnotes. And as I said before, this book is much more academic than anything I've ever tackled before. There's probably over 1,500 footnotes. they dropped out and we're trying to reinsert them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, sounds like Lori's having a lot of fun with that.
Did you write it in some weird program?
Yeah, it's called Word.
Oh.
Well, over at Huntington Press, they use Apple computers for the most part. Were you using a PC or an Apple?
Word, which would be a PC.
Well, they have Word for Apple.
Yeah, they have Word for Apple, but it's possibly that translation.
If it sounds like I'm trying to say something, look, Kurt and my editor, Deke.
When he says Kurt, he means Anthony Curtis, by the way.
Just incredibly helpful and patient and wonderful to work with. So
but now you can officially say the ball is in their court.
No.
Oh, why, you have to correct this?
Yeah, they don't know where the footnotes go.
Well, they can see the little asterisks or the ones.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That's not showing up either? Oh, my God. What a nightmare. Yeah. 1,500 of them?
But they have older drafts of the...
I have the older drafts. Yeah, they do too, but... We can't. It's just a glitch, and we're working through it.
It would seem like if you have the older drafts and the footnotes, you could hire somebody at a reasonable rate to go through and kind of put them in there, wouldn't you?
No, because frankly, the footnotes, you need to be able to know that footnote was inserted in the right spot. If you go off one footnote, you're going to get gibberish for 16 chapters. Okay, because
a lot of academic books are that way anyway.
They certainly are, and I want to make sure that mine isn't.
Do you have any ETA on this book?
You'd have to ask Kurt, but certainly this year.
I thought he said fall.
Interesting side note.
Yes.
I took the deposition last week of a game protection person for one of the majors. And
one of the major casinos.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have any really special insights to give, except that it started out from the perspective of what makes you think you know anything about game protection to me.
Oh, this is somebody like at Ted Whiting's level or somebody at that pretty high?
He was pretty skilled.
Uh-huh.
And the idea that there was a lawyer out there that understood what he did and how it worked, just it flabbergasted him.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was interesting.
So you had a... sounds like the testosterone was flowing.
Yeah, when can we talk about
this case? When can we...
This one's just getting started, obviously.
The fact that he was a game protection person is actually just an aside. But we did go into it somewhat. And the insulting glare and dismissal back was soon dispelled.
He soon...
I mean, how good can he be if he doesn't know who you are already?
Why, thank you.
No, I mean, seriously, right? If you are in this business and take it seriously, how could you not know who you are?
I don't know that the game protection circle is going to hit on me unless I've sued you.
Well, but the game protection circle certainly should know who James is. And if they know James's story, they ought to know you.
Okay.
I mean...
thank you for giving me so much credit.
Well, I don't know. But, all I mean, right. I'm always amazed that people know as little as they do about their jobs.
All right. Thank you, Bob Nersessian. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Mudgkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmudgkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Mudgkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.
Views and opinions expressed on this program were those of the hosts and guests and did not necessarily reflect those of Vegas All Net Radio, its affiliates, or its parent company.